Friday, May 13th. The first date set for the execution of Smith and Hickok passed harmlessly, the Kansas Supreme Court having granted them a stay pending the outcome of appeals for a new trial filed by their lawyers. At that time, the Andrews verdict was under review by the same court. Perry's cell adjoined Dick's. Though invisible to each other, they could easily converse. Yet Perry seldom spoke to Dick, and it wasn't because of any declared animosity between them. After the exchange of a few tepid reproaches, their relationship had turned into one of mutual toleration, the acceptance of uncongenial but helpless Siamese twins. It was because Perry, cautious as always, secretive, suspicious, disliked having the guards and other inmates overhear his private business, especially Andrews, or Andy as he was called on the row. Andrew's educated accent and the formal quality of his college-trained intelligence were anathema to Perry, who, though he had not gone beyond third grade, imagined himself more learned than most of his acquaintances, and enjoyed correcting them, especially their grammar and pronunciation. But here suddenly was someone, just a kid, constantly correcting him. Was it any wonder he never opened his mouth? Better to keep your mouth shut than to risk one of the college kids' snotty lines like, "Don't say disinterested," when what you mean is uninterested. Andrews meant well. He was without malice, but Perry could have boiled him in oil. Yet he never admitted it. Never let anyone there guess why, after one of these humiliating incidents, he sat and sulked and ignored the meals that were delivered to him 3 times a day. At the beginning of June, he stopped eating altogether. He told Dick, "You can wait around for the rope, but not me." And from that moment, he refused to touch food or water, or say one word to anybody. The fast lasted 5 days before the warden took it seriously. On the 6th day, he ordered Smith transferred to the prison hospital, but the move did not lessen Perry's resolve. When attempts were made to force feed him, he fought back, tossed his head, and clenched his jaws until they were rigid as horseshoes. Eventually, he had to be pinioned and fed intravenously or through a tube inserted in a nostril. Even so, over the next 9 weeks, his weight fell from 168 to 115 pounds, and the warden was warned that forced feeding alone could not keep the patient alive indefinitely. Dick, though impressed by Perry's willpower, would not concede that his purpose was suicide. Even when Perry was reported to be in a coma, he told Andrews, with whom he had become friendly, that his former confederate was faking. "He just wants them to think he's crazy." Andrews, a compulsive eater, he had filled a scrapbook with illustrated edibles, everything from strawberry shortcake to roasted pig, said, "Maybe he is crazy, starving himself like that. He just wants to get out of here. Play acting. So they'll say he's crazy and put him in the crazy house." Dick afterward grew fond of quoting Andrew's reply, for it seemed to him a fine specimen of the boy's funny thinking, his off-on-a-cloud complacency. "Well," Andrews allegedly said, "it sure strikes me a hard way to do it. Starving yourself. Because sooner or later we'll all get out of here. Either walk out, or be carried out in a coffin. Myself, I don't care whether I walk or get carried. It's all the same in the end." Dick said, "The trouble with you, Andy, you've got no respect for human life, including your own." Andrews agreed. "And," he said, "I'll tell you something else. If ever I do get out of here alive, I mean over the walls and clear out, well, maybe nobody will know where Andy went, but they'll sure hell know where Andy's been."